are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome to Business Rockstars, where I've got Jake Cloberdan, CEO and founder of One Hope. Thanks so much for stopping by and joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I am familiar with One Hope Wines. I've been to one of the parties, which is just one of the avenues for distribution. But big fan, love what you stand for. You're a mission-driven company. I'll let you explain, what is One Hope?
Yeah, One Hope, our mission is to empower people to serve and celebrate. So we kind of think about serving as both serving great award-winning wines, serving coffee, great gifts to people, but also serving your community, serving your country. And we like people to come around together around celebration and serve our wines. And so we do that through about 40 different wines, all that have a different measurable impact. So for instance, every case of our sparkling funds 25 meals for children fighting hunger, or every case of Pinot funds a pet adoption. We also sell other things like gourmet coffee and gifts, and we market them through restaurants, hotels, retailers around the nation, about 7,500 different placements. And then we also, as you alluded to, do parties and experiences and really try to democratize the Napa Valley wine tasting experience into people's homes, business, or into charity events and other types of venues like that.
Yeah, you're really disrupting the wine industry in a lot of ways, because first of all, it's a hard industry to break into if you didn't come from a family that where you grew up in wine. But then also, like you said, typically the tastings have happened in places like Napa. So can you give us a little bit of insight into disrupting this industry?
Yeah, well, we think technology and software is really important for that. And so we've built a great engineering team in-house. And people kind of go, what? An engineering team for a wine company? And a lot of that's about making our business more scalable, making the ability to bring the Napa Valley wine tasting to other people's homes comes down to being able to provide a platform for our cause entrepreneurs that are out there. So that's a bit of what we're doing that's disruptive, but we're also building a measurable impact into every purchase and every one of those events. So we do that instead of spending typical huge advertising and marketing budget. And we find that it not only improves our marketing to customers, but also accounts and partners want to be a part of it. Large restaurant chains like Landry's and McCormick & Schmick's, large retailers like Whole Foods. And then, of course, our community of cause entrepreneurs who market and raise money really in their local communities. We also allow people who host events to choose where an additional 10% of sales go to. So instead of the traditional route of maybe where a distributor or a retailer would be making that percentage, we're able to donate that percentage to a person's cause of choice. So we have people holding wine parties to raise money for Breast Cancer Walk or their kids' school. And we have about 200 to 250 of those going on a week. Not only is it our biggest sales channel now, but it's also our biggest marketing channel. And it's a great way to really participate in grassroots marketing and get the word out there through word of mouth.
Yeah, that's great. So let's go back to the beginning. I know that there were a lot of co-founders in the beginning. So take me back to when you came up with the idea. What were some of those first steps once you had the idea?
Sure. The early idea really dawned on me when I was in the back of grocery stores working in the wine business for the first time. I graduated from UC Berkeley in 2005, and I went to business school there. And I kind of fell in love with this idea, this romantic idea of selling wine. And I moved down to Newport Beach. That was my original territory. So can't get much better than that. Selling wine, Newport Beach.
Living the dream.
Living the dream. But really, I found myself in the back of grocery stores at like 3 a.m., you know, downstacking pallets of all kinds of different groceries. And you do that in exchange for the best display spots around the store. And so I wasn't only like stocking wine. I was also putting yogurt in the milk box, you know, and stacking Campbell's soup to the shelves. And it's then when I noticed cause marketing for the first time. That was October of 2005. And all these different products were raising money for breast cancer. And part of me thought, huh, this is kind of cool that they're raising money and for a good cause. And then the other part of me was like, they should do it year round. Such a temporary kind of felt like a gimmick marketing campaign to me. So that was when I first had the idea to build a wine brand that gave back year round. Another 6 months later, got a call from one of my best friends growing up, really my first friend that was a girl who lived next door to me growing up. And she shared the bad news that she had blood cancer. And that was an aha moment for me where I flew home to see her the next day. And on the plane ride there, I kind of decided I was going to tell her I'm going to really actually go do this. I had thought about this idea for 6 months. I had written down a few goals, but I hadn't really taken the first steps. And so when I sat with her, I told her, hey, I've had this idea. I'm going to start this business. And she told me what her path ahead looked like and the treatment she was going to be going through. And that's kind of the impetus of when I actually started the company. I flew home and formed the company. And then another year later, about, I had gotten a winemaker and our first cases and my co-founders to kind of join me as I started to share the story of what I wanted to do. And so seven other people left from the wine company we were at to join me in this. And like I said, they were all a couple years into their career as well. And we jumped into it headfirst, 168 cases in the back of a U-Haul truck, drove them down from up in Northern California to a public storage unit in LA, and we were in business.
Wow, what a great story. So how many co-founders?
There were eight of us originally. There's six of us still at the company today. The other two are still big cheerleaders for us and have gone on to do great things. And but having six make it a decade.
Incredible.
10 years of giving back, 10 years of building a business. And really, as you touched on before, none of us came from the wine industry. None of us had families in the wine industry. So we literally started from zero. We had to talk a winemaker into making our first 168 cases. And it was 56 cases of Chardonnay, Cabernet, and Merlot. And the Chardonnay towards breast cancer, Merlot towards AIDS, and Cabernet towards autism. Since then, our Merlot now goes towards life-saving vaccines. But our Cabernet is still going towards autism and our Chardonnay towards breast cancer.
Wow. Okay. I've got so many questions. First of all, how do you make so many co-founders work? That's a lot of leaders.
It's challenging. At the time, we were all really good friends too. So even on top of it, we were already friends traveling into it. And I think it really, we just respected each other a lot. We started to learn how to communicate with each other. We started to learn how to kind of the difference between when we were friends and then when we were at work and had to put our professional hats on. But we also all just respected each other as leaders in our own areas of the business. And so even though I'm the CEO, I still can be led by our chief revenue officer when it comes to sales. I can still be led by our chief operational officer when it comes to operations and logistics and things like that. And so I think we always had a really nice balance of respecting what other people needed to lead in and all being able to lead and follow. And I also think we were just honest with each other and we trusted each other and we were willing to work hard for each other. But the number one thing that we talked about was being people that were inspiring to work for. And then also people that inspired the people that we worked for. And so if you're inspiring to work for and you inspire the people that you work for, then you're an inspiring person to work with. And I think we've continued to inspire each other along the way. And that's how you keep the band together for 10 years.
Yeah. And you were sharing off camera that you all have the same philosophy of leadership and that it's basically an upside down hierarchy. Can you explain that philosophy a little bit?
Yeah. Well, so me in particular as our CEO and really our executive leadership team, we have kind of a service culture. We are in the hospitality world and I think everybody really is in one way or another, but we very much are because we deal with wine and gourmet coffee and things like that. And similarly to hospitality, if you're a service-oriented organization, we think about me as the CEO not being on the top of this hierarchy, but being on the bottom and serving the next layer. And ultimately, what you see happen is our executive leadership team's down on the bottom, and then we've got our overall team. We serve our cause entrepreneurs, our accounts. They serve our customers, and our customers serve humanity. And so we really believe that, you know, it's us driving and serving versus putting orders down and going out to the end customer.
Can you give me an example of how you guys serve your team in a way that maybe isn't traditionally seen in other companies?
Yeah, I think that we, one, make our leadership team and executive team super accessible and transparent to the people that they work with. We have a really flat organization. So even if you're the leader, We kind of think of you having to put your name on it, but we think of the team as all being accountable on a daily basis. We look at where we need help and on a weekly basis with people's leadership. And ultimately that goes to the leadership team, and it drives this this comfort around it being okay to ask for help. Making it known that that's okay has created a comfort level where they feel like their manager isn't driving down orders to them, but more there to help support them and make them successful.
So we are going to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about building a wine company and one that's mission-driven and really, really empowering your cause entrepreneurs. So sit tight. We'll be right back. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
When's the last time you checked your credit score? Those three-digit scores can have a huge impact on your financial life. Credit Karma can help you with free scores, free reports, and free monitoring. Credit Karma also gives you the tips, tools, and advice you need to understand your credit and how to improve it. You can even spot potential errors on your credit report. That can mean better interest rates on loans and credit cards, which can save you thousands of dollars in the long run. Signing up is completely free. No credit card needed. Visit creditkarma.com or download the Credit Karma app now.
Message and data rates may apply.
What if there were a top-ranked business degree that gave you access to world-renowned faculty leaders and mentors, but on your schedule? The W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University is now accepting high-quality applicants for its online MBA, Information Management, and Business Analytics master's programs. Learn more about the W.P. Carey business degrees online. For more information, text RANK to 79645. That's RANK to 79645.
Hello.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where we are talking to the CEO and founder of One Hope. So we mentioned how you guys have been able to be successful in the wine industry, a very competitive industry, one that's hard to tap into, but you did it. You did have 2 years working in the industry, which you said that was helpful in some ways. Can you share why it was helpful?
Sure. Well, when I started, I knew nothing about wine. So just the wine education alone, education about one channel, which was mostly grocery stores and understanding that space. But the biggest thing was probably finding my teammates. They were all top-notch people. The company we worked for did a lot of the work finding great recruits from around the nation. And we were in a tight little class that was on a fast path to becoming big leaders with the organization. So it helped introduce me to them. It helped give us a running start to work together and find that we wanted to start a business together. And so sometimes getting into the industry, the biggest thing that it does is give you an introduction to other people who are passionate about the space that you're in.
Yeah. And then a little bit of that added respect within the industry too, that, okay, these guys paid their dues a little bit. They know the behind the scenes and people trusting you more.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think if we came in and had no experience and didn't really know at least some parts of what we were talking about, then we would have had no credibility. But we had worked in the trenches and we had done it with arguably the best in the business with our previous employer.
Now, another obstacle that entrepreneurs often face is, oh gosh, it's all about who you know, but I don't know anyone. And I think that you guys are also a really good example of how you ended up meeting the right people. It's not that you were born into the right family, et cetera, et cetera. You were at a trade show and you networked. You networked to meet the right people. So can you tell me about that story about meeting a winemaking icon?
Yeah, sure. It's exactly right. Showing up at these places, we went to hundreds of events before that trade show where we ultimately met Michael Mondavi, and Michael introduced us to his son, Rob Mondavi Jr., who ended up being a huge part of our wine story and our winemaking side of the business. Rob and his colleague and teammate, Tony Coltrane, who is a longtime family winemaker for the Mondavis and for Robert Mondavi, have made almost every wine that we have in our portfolio. And we've just recently added Mari Coyle, who's a young up-and-coming superstar female winemaker, who is our director of wine. So I think that running into them, you know, is a little bit by chance. And I always feel super grateful and fortunate with it. But it took, you know, hundreds of events before where we didn't necessarily run into Michael Mondavi or a legend like that.
It's a numbers game.
Yeah, a little bit of it is numbers game. And then also, I think it's, you know, studying the past and forecasting the future. And so it's, you know, how many are you doing every day? But it's also creating a good strategy and continuing to tinker with it based on your previous track record. And so you want to not only up your numbers, but up your closing percentage. That's usually a pretty good sign.
Right.
Across the years, we've been lucky enough to add some of the best athletes in the world, some of the best musicians, some of the best CEOs to our community of investors and partners in One Hope. And so for that, it's because we cover a lot of ground. We had a lot of people talking to a lot of different people.
Yeah. In addition to the numbers game theory, what do you think has been the key to building those right relationships?
I think kind of doing what we said we were going to do. I told a lot of people early on, like, hey, we're building this company to be a platform for giving back, a platform for cost-centric commerce and building a measurable impact into your business. And over time, we've done that and we've refined that system of how we do it. And I think we're one of the best in the business world now about quantifying our impact and communicating that out to our consumers so they feel connected to it. One of the other things I said we were going to do, I said we're going to be the largest direct-to-consumer wine brand in the U.S. And now I think we're on the path to be the largest direct-to-consumer wine brand in the world. And they watched us do this over time. I told them, I started saying that about like 7 years ago when we first started going online. And so when people kind of, even if they sit on the sideline and they decide not to get involved, they still watch, you know, and you never know when it's going to be. I've had an investor that recently invested with us that I met 7 years ago, pitching him on our seed round, and now we're in our Series C. And so it's not only about, you know, numbers game and how many people you can talk to. It's about how you follow up and not just follow up with them, but follow up with what you said you were going to do. And if enough people see you do what you say you're going to do, when you do it again and you say, now I'm going to do this, they listen.
Amazing. Yeah, really building that trust and follow through. So let's talk about the direct to consumer because, wow, that's amazing. On track to be the biggest in the world. Tell me a little bit about that side of your business and how you've been able to grow so quickly.
Yeah, well, we started in the traditional side. So most of our business up until a few years ago was still through what's called three-tier in the wine industry, where you sell to a distributor and the distributor sells to a retailer or a hotel or a restaurant. But we started becoming intrigued with this idea that more and more people were buying everything online and having it shipped to their doorstep. And so we started thinking about direct-to-consumer in 2008, so only a year after we started. And back then, very few wineries were online and shipping because you could only really legally ship to a little over 10 states. And so it was only a portion of the market, but we jumped in anyways, because I really believe that this was going to be a thing of the future. And now if you flash forward to where we are today, we've still got our traditional channel where we sell to distributors and retailers and restaurants and things like that. And we do a large portion of business there, but 85% of our business is actually through our direct channels. So we sell online through onehopewine.com, as well as Amazon, where we're the number one selling wine brand on Amazon. We sell what we call inside sales, where we sell directly to companies, and we sell great gifting programs for holiday gifting and year-round gifting and wine consumption. And then our last channel we call Via One Hope. And Via One Hope, as I touched on, is this direct marketing model. We call it merit-based marketing because someone can come in with us brand new. And even if you have no seniority, you can earn your way up based on a meritocracy with us. And that channel is growing at over 250% year over year. And it's also now our largest channel. But all of them kind of work together. And as Via One Hope grows, we're seeing more and more pull coming from restaurants and hotels asking to buy our product. And it's because they're learning about it in this kind of platform that where we democratize the Napa Valley wine tasting experience, and we're bringing it all around the nation.
Let's talk about your cause entrepreneurs. How does your company empower them, and what do you really think it takes to be successful as a cause entrepreneur?
Great question. So what we do to empower them is provide them, one, a great portfolio of products, To some pointers on how to run the business, everything from how to outreach to a person who is going to host a wine event, to how to follow up with a customer, how to talk to people at the party, how to follow up after the party. We give them a great wine education. So Mari, our director of wine, not only a superstar winemaker, but she's great on video and creates these modules to train them. The last one last week was called Champs 101. And she took them through all these different types of champagnes, sparkling rosés to champagnes and everything in between, and taught them the difference of them. We try to empower them with giving them a sense of community and making it a lot of fun.
So cool. Well, such an amazing business that you've built. Congratulations. And thank you so much for giving us a behind the scenes look and so much business insight. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for being part of our mission. We've donated over $2.5 million to date, and that number keeps raising. We'll do over $1 million this year for the first time, and it's pretty exciting, and shows like yours are the reason that we continue to get the word out there.
Oh, well, we're happy to help you get the word out. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Hey guys, good news. The outrageously expensive Little Blue Pill is now generic, which means you can get the prescription medication to treat ED at affordable prices, and Hims makes it extra affordable. Right now, get your first month's supply for free. All you pay is just $5 for your medical consultation when you go to forhims.com/doctor. After that, it's just $30 for a month's supply. Sure beats paying big bucks for just one blue pill, doesn't it? Plus, you won't need an awkward in-person doctor's appointment to get the prescription. Hims has doctors online who can prescribe the medication, and a pharmacy sends it right to your door. It's affordable, private, and incredibly easy. Nobody likes dealing with ED. Now, thanks to Hims, nobody has to. And that's really good news. To get your first order for just $5, you need to go to this exclusive address, forhims.com/doctor. That's forhims.com/doctor for your first month for just $5. forhims.com/doctor.
Prescription products require an online physician consultation and are only available if the physician determines a prescription is appropriate. See website for full details.
Hey.
Inspire, inform, and connecting a community of entrepreneurs. This is Business Rockstars. I'm Pat O'Brien. Welcome to the show. Let's check in with Mark Lack.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us right now is John Cefalu. He's the CEO of Health to Humanity. Pleasure to have you on the show, brother.
Thanks very much for having me.
I got to ask, how old are you?
I am 21.
21.
Still in college, yeah.
Finishing up school and everything.
Finishing up.
I hated college. Health to Humanity. Tell us about it. What's your company?
So Health to Humanity is a social enterprise, which is focused on kind of connecting consumer products and purchases here into international impacts. So specifically, we're selling hygiene products that are going into the proceeds into developing these micro businesses all around the world and the developing nations, teaching them how to make their own hygiene products, teaching them how to run their own businesses, teaching them how to kind of pull themselves out of their own issues. So we're not focusing on the end product, which is soap. We're focusing on the root problem, which is kind of personal development, people developing these solutions themselves, and then getting to that end goal, which is
that's
the product.
We were talking about that. I was like, it's like right out of the Bible, right? It's like you can give a man a fish or you can teach him how to fish. You guys
Absolutely.
Are essentially doing a combination of the both, right?
Absolutely, yes.
I love that. How did you get into this space? I feel like you, like me, apparently wanted to get an entrepreneurship because I was getting ready to start my first business right out of college, and I did. Went through my struggles and whatnot before I started to get Liftoff. How did you end up getting into entrepreneurship?
Well, this whole kind of story starts in high school. I mean, I was focused completely on sports. Everything not Health to Humanity is what I was focused on. So, I mean, so I actually went to my high school advisor getting into college, and he was asking me all about what I was doing, how I was getting prepared for my applications, all that, the whole nine yards. And he said, hey, you got nothing volunteer-wise. You've done nothing to give back to the community, which is going to hurt you. I went on a service trip to Kenya. Saw this whole situation.
Are you Mormon?
I'm not. I got a call.
I don't know if it was like a mission or you just were
No, okay. I randomly got a call from a family connection who said, hey, do you want to go to Kenya? I was like, yeah, let's go. Yeah. And we pulled up to this orphanage and my whole world just kind of changed. I mean, I saw these kids, I saw what they had and what they didn't have. They loved the relationships that they had with their brothers and sisters, but they didn't have any opportunity. I mean, this was kind of there as far as they were going to get. And I really wanted to come back and create a solution for that that went beyond just giving someone a bar of soap or giving them something. So that's where the journey really kind of started, got to college, and we just kind of took off from there.
I love that. How long have you been doing it?
This is year three. Our third year anniversary was the 22nd of September. So,
nice. Yeah. So the team's growing, the business is growing.
The team's growing. It's been a long, arduous journey. I mean, I still to this day have not taken a paycheck. I mean, the passion behind it is really what fuels it. We're getting to the point now where we're finally starting to see that substantial growth, partnerships, distribution, all the different stuff that come.
Takes time.
Takes a lot of time.
You'll be the young 10-year overnight success that people want.
Yeah.
You know, because you'll be what? And it'll have set 3 years already, got another 7. You'll still only be like late 20s.
Yeah.
And so people will be like, oh, he's so successful, so young, he got lucky, but they won't know the 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been so difficult. I mean, people has been kind of the hardest part of this whole journey.
What do you mean?
I mean, just in the sense of getting people to having people with the right passions for this. I mean, not taking a paycheck and working for this type of venture at the beginning is hard. Yeah, no, it's got to come. But if we have the right message, the right mission, the right kind of foundation set up, people are going to come in and work. And that's what we've seen. I mean, it's simply just taking that, asking for what we need, working with the right people, delegating out, getting out of my own head in the sense that I can't do it all on my own. Mm. I don't want to do it all on my own. And if we're focusing on the mission first, then the product and the supply chain and all the different logistics on the business side of things, they'll fall into place.
What are you going to school for? What do you major
in? So my major is business admin with an emphasis in marketing.
Okay. Do you feel like that anything you've learned in school has been beneficial to you?
Yes and
be
no.
Be honest, because I'm not a big fan of school. I did go to college for marketing.
Absolutely, no. And the classes themselves, I mean, I don't feel like they've equipped me in the sense of being out in the real world.
But you have both experiences, which is what I love, because most kids go to school, they get their degree, then they go in the real world and realize, nothing I just learned actually is real. Nothing actually matters in the business world. And maybe if you have a job, but you have your own company, so you get to actually see.
Yeah. Well, growing through, I mean, everything's kind of about the networking and relationship. I mean, it's really who you know. I mean, no matter what, it always comes down to that next connection that's going to get you to the next milestone. So I say yes in the sense that the connections I've made with professors and faculty and staff and other students are really what's grown this company. In terms of the framework of the class curriculum, I mean, I don't know. It's great. I mean, having that educational foundation, I guess, is important, and the degree is fantastic, but it's really kind of the relationships and the connections and the networking that's really been beneficial.
So what are some keys that people can learn from that you've learned to have to build those relationships? Most people are afraid of rejection. They're introverted. They don't know how to network. They don't want to network. But you just said how important it is. So what are some keys to doing it?
The key is just knowing you're going to get rejected. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've walked into meetings and walked out with a no, or you got to do this, you got to do that. And that kind of constructive criticism, I mean, it can be taken as a negative, or I mean, there's always kind of a silver lining in every no, because they're onto something. I mean, maybe it's not exactly where you think you need to go or where you want to go, but they may have a connection, they may have some sort of idea that might push you along. So getting out of that mindset that rejection is the worst possible scenario and making it so that it's something that can turn into the next stage of growth in your business is the key.
So what would you say is one of the biggest lessons you've had? You said you're going into your 3 years right now. If you could go back and sit with your younger self at the beginning, one piece of advice you'd share?
Find the right mentors and advisors as soon as you can. I mean, when I started this, I jumped right in. I didn't write a business plan, didn't do any of the foundational keys that you need to do. Literally went online, bought some melt and pour soap, poured it into these little stupid elephant molds, dyed them with some green food coloring, and thought I was going to make $1 million company.
Welcome to being like every other entrepreneur who thinks their idea and product's going to make $1 million their first year.
And luckily, my grandpa at the time, I kind of showed him. I was all excited about it. He's like, "This sucks. Like, what are you doing with this green little elephant soap?" So it really kind of forced me to think about what we were doing. So we started making it ourselves. I mean, the whole first like 4 months outside of developing the nonprofit side of it and the mission and the vision over there was spent driving all around LA, finding ingredients on how to make your own soap and figuring out how to do that and understanding the process and what you can and can't do. And we wasted so much money and time and just energy because we didn't look to anybody for help. We just hopped on YouTube and thought that it was going to be a great idea to look at soap making lessons and we were going to hit it big. So
yeah,
it's
I love that you're sharing this because I just want all the people at home that are like literally like as they're listening, they're like pouring their soap bar, trying to like start their own business. They're like,
yeah, no, I mean,
you're telling me it's not going to be easy my first year or even in my third.
No, I mean, it took us like 60 batches of soap to get to our current recipe. And I mean, we clogged up the entire Chapman dorm on our first couple attempts because it just,
but they love that.
I don't know if this might be the first they're hearing about it. So I don't know. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it that, I mean, and that's only one tiny little aspect of starting it up. I mean, then you got to go out and get all the money and getting people to give you money for a commodity. And
so you raise money.
We have in little tiny increments. I mean, right now
we're going into
friends, family, and fools, mainly the fools at this point. But we're going into kind of our first stage of funding and our first kind of stages of investment and really starting to hit that growth peak.
What does it feel like to, regardless of the level of success, what does it feel like to just be playing the game of entrepreneurship?
Being here, being able to network with some of the other, I mean, working with our competitors has been just being able to get those meetings, being able to get into.
How's that, that's like contradicting, working with our competitors.
Well, that's the coolest thing about this social entrepreneurial that kind of stage is that there's so much more that we can do together. I mean, there's definitely some key competitors in just our small niche space of soap that gives back.
Yeah, the biggest companies in the world, Johnson & Johnson.
Yeah. And there's more, where we differentiate ourselves is the fact that we're doing it, we're taking the impact under our own wing. I mean, we have our own nonprofit entity that works alongside of our brand that we're going out and we're actually creating this impact. We're creating this brand all around the world that people are recognizing, partnering with the governments in these developing nations to work alongside their agendas, walking with these people to let them know that they're just as pivotal in this health humanity growth as we are. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that you see in many of these spaces. I mean, you'll see companies that are giving percentages back and you'll see companies that are giving bars of soap. Even, I mean, on a grander scale, just being able to work within these cultures, within these environments and have them know that their motivation, their innovation, and their growth is just as key as our growth over here is really empowering.
So as a young person, you and I both understand that we grew up right around the time of technology starting to really take off, the internet. So I'm assuming the fact that you're a young entrepreneur, you're probably following a lot of the guys that I'm either following or that I'm friends with online, like a Gary Vaynerchuk or a Tai Lopez or a Tony Robbins or a John Assaroff. Who do you like to follow? Who's an entrepreneur that you like?
I mean, it started with Blake Mycoskie. I mean, that's just Tom's being able to understand his story.
We were just talking about Tom, so that is one of the guys you like.
I mean, he started this whole kind of ideology. I mean, he was the pioneer of this space. Yeah, and I mean, I don't agree with everything they're doing, and we have our own fight against giving, which is really important to us in the sense that we want to empower people, not just give them things. But at the same time, seeing him work through this space, seeing him compete with some of the biggest brands in the world through this social impact model, has been inspiring, and it's what's kind of led to me feeling like I can do this.
Yeah. Do you have any things that you've studied, events that you've attended, people outside of him that maybe you've read the books of that you really enjoy and have learned from?
The major book that I've read recently that has really kind of is The Promise of a Pencil. And I forget exactly.
Pencils to Promise by Adam Braun?
Yeah, Adam Braun.
I know who that is,
So I read his book recently, and it just kind of talks about.
He's the brother of Scooter Braun, who manages Justin Bieber.
Oh, really? I had no idea.
Yeah, Adam Braun is brothers of Scooter Braun. Scooter Braun manages Justin Bieber. Adam Braun does Pencils to Promise. He and I are speaking on the same stage at an event. I think it's a very small world. That's why I was like, start to get in. You start to know all the people.
No, that's incredible. Yeah, I mean, just hearing these stories of people who are making it in this space and in this kind of nonprofit realm and who are making the most impact is just really inspiring. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, I want our company to get beaten one day. I mean, that's a weird thing that no one ever says. But
because it's about giving and serving. So if anything, it's like, I'm so committed to the mission and the vision of helping that if somebody beats us, they're just helping the same cause.
Yeah,
I love that. I love that. That's powerful stuff. Pleasure having you on the show, John. Yeah,
thank you very much.
I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. Connecting a community of entrepreneurs is what we do. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
Question, do you have a health insurance plan you are not happy with? Well, Bethany and Jason thought they were stuck. Their plan just kept getting more expensive, and Bethany's favorite doctor didn't even take that plan anymore. And then some friends at church told them about MediShare.
With our previous insurance, we were paying $1,200 a month. With MediShare, we now pay around $600 a month.
Yes, they're paying $600 less per month, and that's a pretty typical savings with MediShare. And they actually like MediShare more.
I was able to go back to my original doctor that I absolutely loved, and it's just been an absolutely beautiful thing being a part of MediShare.
Yeah, so they pay a lot less, and they like it more. No wonder MediShare is growing so fast. Find out more. They're super easy to talk to. All you have to do is call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE, 844-91-BIBLE.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
How can events help you grow your business? I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Joining us to help elaborate and answer that question for us is Sarah Shuey. She's the CEO of Happily. It's a pleasure to have you on the show with us.
It's great to be here.
How can we use events to help us grow our business? I know that you're an expert on this, and that's what your company does. So what do we do?
Yeah, thanks. We live in the age of technology where everybody's connecting through a like, you know.
We're hiding behind our phones.
Yeah, exactly. The glow of the mobile screen.
Yeah. We don't even want to do phone calls anymore. We'd rather text, right?
Exactly. So events really helps make really important, lasting relationships that can really take your business and really give it a lot of longevity with some of your most important clients.
So I'm a business owner, or maybe I'm an aspiring entrepreneur. What is the first way that I should either go to an event? What type of event should I attend? Am I creating my own event? Help me out here.
Yeah, I think if you haven't ever, the thing is everybody's been to an event, right? Like you've had a birthday, right? So, if you're starting out, I think going to
conferences, networking events
where there are other CEOs or people who are interested in thinking about the same things as you are.
That's it right there. Context. You're not just going to an event. You're going to an event that's related to either what you're doing or what you want to do. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. You know, be strategic with your time because that one can take you pretty far, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But these conferences and these networking events, when you're in person, people start sharing like their secrets, their secret processes, you know, and especially
when they meet you though, right?
Exactly.
Like, I actually know who you are. I actually like you. We're building rapport. let me share some secrets. Versus over social media, it's like there's an element of rapport that I feel like you can't really connect as fast or as deep without being face to face.
Yeah, you don't really know who you're dealing with, you know, when it's, you know, there's Instagram in between you.
Yeah.
But you know, a coffee, a drink, right? That actually helps fuel, loosen the tongue and start, you know, sharing ideas.
Do you have advice for the person who maybe it doesn't have to do with hosting your own event? Because let's be honest, they're really tough to do. Even if it's a small event, I won't even get to the large scale. We do an event every year that costs $1.2 million. So I know how difficult it is. It takes us an entire year to put the $1.2 million together to put the event on for 600 people. Even the small events, though, with 50 to 100 people are very difficult to put on. So let's not talk about that yet. Let's just talk about for the person who's going to start attending events, because that's probably the most easy thing for the general public of aspiring entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs to do. You have any networking tips?
Yeah, say your first and last name when you introduce yourself to people, and your company name and what you do right off the bat. Just that intro is really helpful. And then I always follow up with, you know, asking the person their first and last name, what their company does. And then
if they don't already have a name tag on.
Even still, you know, I make them tell me. And then ask how you can help. So give, you know, the more that you give, you're going to get back. Listen to the problems that they're trying to solve. Listen to what they're thinking about. And it helps you understand how much time you actually like want to and can allocate to this person.
With that person, yeah.
As well. So it's, you know, it is self-serving when you ask someone how you can help them.
Yeah, I mean, I think something that was a really interesting distinction for me is that every act of contribution is self-serving because it feels good. No matter what, you are giving in some way, shape, or form because of how it's going to make you feel.
Yes, absolutely.
And so I love what you also said, which is you're there to add value. I think a lot of people have the preconceived notion that you're there to network, to meet people that you can get something from. But a mentor of mine shared with me that if you look at networking and people as bank accounts, you can never get a withdrawal before making a deposit.
Right.
And so simply look at people that you want to make a deposit in that you feel will pay the largest return, short term or long term.
Right.
Is that a good, do you
like
that one?
No, I think
that was something
great.
That my mentor shared with me. And I was like, wow, that's like such a great way to look at networking.
Yeah. I mean, people can feel it when you're there to just take from them, you know, so change that mindset and you'll actually have people offering to help you.
Yeah. It's just the law of reciprocity, right? Add value and they're going to feel in some way, shape or form obligated almost to return value back to you. CEO of Happily, Sarah Hsu, is joining us. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, and we're talking about how events can help you grow your business and your company. We've gone over some very practical steps so far. What's maybe some of the more tactical things that you feel like we haven't covered about how events can help somebody grow their business?
Yeah, I think that if you want to grow your customer base, events can be an incredible way to do that and get the word out. You know, every time that you invite somebody to your event, you send an invitation out, you send a save the date out. You actually have about 10 touch points before before the actual event happens. So just having the opportunity to relate with that person over and over again really helps cement your brand with your customer base. And then if you're being really smart about getting them to share and invite other people, you know, your event is really beautiful and it's so great and it's fun, they take a picture and they post it on their social media following. It helps grow your brand and grow your business with their networks. And you're getting this endorsement, from these customers that you really care about in their communities just by, you know, simply entertaining and hosting them and letting them know that you appreciate them.
So you've been doing events. I'm sure you've come across the whole sponsorship thing many, many times.
Yeah.
Advice for people to go out and capitalize on getting their first sponsors who haven't done it before?
Listen, you know, go to your sponsor and say, here's what my goal is. Mm. Here's how much money we're spending. Yeah. Right. And then shut up and listen. Listen to what they think is interesting. Do they think the guest count is interesting? Right. Do they think the goal is big enough? And they'll tell you, you know, what they can and they can't do. And so you listen to what the parameters are of the sponsor and you think about what you can give and, you know, what you need to pull back on.
Do you tell them, here's what we're looking to get? Like, you know, a lot of times I do these business events and very commonly a company named Infusionsoft is always there. And so I'm curious for you, like, do you go and do you ask them like, here's, we're charging 35 grand or 10 grand or 5 grand? How do you come up with price?
It depends on the person. We have a formula where you come up with the price based on your expenses.
Yeah.
So, No, I tend to not put a number on because I just feel like it's shooting myself in the foot. Like, why ask for, you know, $35,000 if they can give me $350,000? Yeah. And it turns into a conversation about a series
of things.
Start the negotiations. Yeah. Okay. So, no, I don't. I more talk about the opportunity and the ways that we're thinking about engagement.
I love that. Well, I'm going to have to make sure the team turns this into a blog post about how events can help you grow your business.
Hire us. Yeah.
It's nice a pleasure. Just hire us. I love that. I'm Mark Lack. This is Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs is what we do. You can join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that the host nor Business Rockstars is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.